days. With great effort, he said, and a considerable degree of outside help. Tavare turned their head to the side, looking perplexed.
Radiance does not understand, but Radiance is grateful.
Karras offered a soft smile. Maybe you will someday. Tavare lowered their head again.
Will you teach me, Great One?
Karras offered Tavare a hand.
I can try.
Try.
Tavare nodded.
Yes. Radiance will also try.
The golden creature accepted Karras's offered hand, and Karras pulled Tavare back to its feet. Karras turned toward Derek.
I think we're done for today.
Derek lowered his sword.
Agreed. Thank you for the match.
He bowed formally at the waist.
Can I trust you will not harm my friend with whatever lessons you have planned?
Karras returned the bow and then raised both hands in a defensive gesture.
We're just going to talk.
Derek leaned his sword against his shoulder.
I'd be very interested in hearing about what you discuss.
Karras shook his head.
I'm afraid any conversation that I'm having with Tavare is going to need to be private. At least for now. It will be simpler that way. I'm sure you understand.
Well, that can wait until I've had more time to think about all this, then.
Tavare, return.
The golden-skinned figure lowered their head.
Radiance obeys.
Tavare shifted into mist, the golden sword clattering to the ground. Karras folded his arms.
That wasn't necessary. I think it was. You've given me a great deal to think about today, and I appreciate it. But until I understand more about what you are, I'd rather avoid taking more risks.
Karras raised a hand and his own true weapon, a great sword in a white scabbard with a spherical metal pommel, flew to it.
Fine, but you're putting your suspicions over the potential for your friend to learn and grow.
Derek shrugged.
I'm certain we can make some sort of arrangement eventually.
Karras reattached his scabbard to his belt, which looked rather awkward since the weapon was so large that it nearly dragged against the ground. Then he turned to walk toward the hatch to exit the roof.
Your friend can make their own choices.
Derek let Karras leave without saying another word, then wiped his forehead with his free hand.
So, who wants to help me fix the roof?
That was so amazing!
Patrick was so excited that he was practically vibrating.
I've never seen a fight like that before.
I was less interested in how impressive the fight was, and more curious about what Tavare had been talking about. It had called Karras Great One. What did that mean? Derek had assessed that Karras wasn't an attuned at all, and when I'd seen Karras fight my mother, she made a remark about his shroud not working properly. What was he? He could fight against a visage, at least for the short period of time I'd seen him dueling with Katashi. If he was a visage himself, that would explain how broad and unusual his abilities were. He claimed to be from a faraway land, but was that a ruse? Or were the visages themselves foreigners, perhaps? If he wasn't a visage, a child of the tyrant in gold was another strong possibility. If Tavare had some way of sensing that, it certainly would have explained why it had been so fearful. Would it call a demigod like that Great One, though? That sounded like a title of respect. What would a summoned monster respect? A visage? A god beast, perhaps? That was a worrying notion. Perhaps even more than the idea of a child of the tyrant in gold, a humanoid god beast. That was similar to what Echion was being pushed toward, too, wasn't it? Could Karras have been an earlier experiment, or something similar? I had too many questions. I felt some sympathy for Derek. I was pretty sure he was trying to find out the same things, and using that sparring session to draw out details. I didn't respond to Patrick in a timely fashion. I was too lost in thought. Fortunately, I didn't need to. Someone else shared his enthusiasm.
I couldn't believe it. Remember when Karras was like...
Marissa made a swipe at the air with an open palm.
And then Derek was like...
Patrick brought his own hand toward Marissa's, catching it. I smiled at the reenactment, but I had other things on my mind. Like food, for example. I'd eaten the couple things they'd handed me on the rooftop, but I was still starving. I made my way down the stairs to the kitchen, barely aware of the conversation happening around me. Eventually, Patrick wandered off to go play a game of Valor with Sarah. Marissa stayed to get herself more food, but she picked a spot at the other side of the table rather than sitting next to me. She looked introspective, so I didn't bother her. I made it into the middle of breakfast before Derek arrived downstairs and sat down at the table across from me.
How's your recovery coming along?
I'd barely been thinking about that. I still had a throbbing pain in my back from where I'd nearly been crushed by a giant spider, but the Ring of Regeneration was working to repair that damage. Most of my other injuries had healed. I still had some half-healed cuts on my hand from when I detonated Jin's Phoenix Sigil, nearly killing him. I tried not to think too much about that. My worst symptoms were a killer headache and a perpetual burning sensation in the new attunement on my right hand. I still hadn't figured out what it was. I'm intact. Better than I could be, considering what we just went through. Derek nodded in understanding.
I should mention that I appreciate your help in freeing me from that ring.
He shuddered.
I don't like to think about what I'd be doing if you hadn't.
You're welcome. I know it wasn't you that was attacking us back there. And thanks for letting us stay at your house.
He waved a hand dismissively. It's just practical at this point. I usually house my climber team here before and after we head into the tower. Since we just went in the tower together, I consider you a part of my team.
I took the compliment for what it was and smiled. Appreciated. Hope we won't have to go back in there anytime soon, though.
He shifted to a more serious expression. Agreed. You should sit this out for a while, at least until you recover. I can take care of things from here.
I set my food down. That's not quite what I meant. If you're going back in there, I should be going with you. I'm too deep in this to back out now.
The only reason I agreed to bring a quartz into the tower in the first place was because Katashi had specifically marked you, Corrin. Even then, it was a terrible idea, and I shouldn't have let Ordin convince me. I know you still want to help, but you can do that without putting yourself in more danger.
I think we just established that you would still be under Ordin's control if not for my help. Derek sighed.
With the way things happened in there, yeah, but if I'd had my way, I would have brought a team of citrines and emeralds to escort Vera. Ordin wouldn't have been able to seize control of all of us at once, and some of them might have even been able to break me out faster if I'd been wearing the ring.
He paused, putting his palm on his forehead.
I don't like to admit this, but Ordin played all of us. That group was composed of people that Ordin thought she could handle. She obviously underestimated you and Sarah. I don't think anyone could have predicted Sarah would demonstrate that kind of power as a first-year student. But Sarah isn't in fighting shape now, and you're still a quartz.
I raised my hand, then flicked on my attunement for just an instant to confirm a suspicion. Actually, I'm not. Derek blinked. He obviously couldn't see the crimson aura that I'd just seen around my own body for the first time, but he put the implication together.
Your new attunement is stronger, I take it?
Carnelian. I still don't know exactly what it does, but I've used my right hand for dueling so much that I must have already had enough mana for my second attunement to be Carnelian as soon as I got it. He folded his hands back together, giving me a thoughtful look.
That's unusual. Your right hand was stronger than your actual attuned location?
I'm not sure I've seen that before. He shook his head as if to dismiss that line of thought.
Anyway, congratulations. It's a significant milestone to reach Carnelian, especially as a first-year student, and having two attunements is admittedly useful. But you still shouldn't be coming with me into the tower until you're vastly stronger.
I shrugged at that. From a logical standpoint, I didn't really disagree with him. Even if I'd managed to help in the tower before, that didn't mean he could rely on me to be similarly useful in the future. And he was right that a citrine or emerald ally would probably contribute more to his success in a climb. Presuming there was a sufficient number of people he could trust, that is. I changed the subject just a bit.
I'm not sure the next thing we need to look into is even in the tower. Assuming you're still trying to track down Ordin's operation, Our best lead is Alora Theus.
Derek winced when I said the name.
Derek and Alora had been romantically involved, and they'd had a falling out after he discovered what she was up to. So I wasn't surprised that Derek looked decidedly unhappy when he replied, "You're not wrong. There were other members of the group that went with her and Vera, but I believe they're either still in the tower or in hiding elsewhere, perhaps working on the artificial attunements that Ordon described.
Do you know why Alora isn't with them?"
He glanced away from me.
"Yeah. She came to me for help. She knew they'd gotten into danger after they kidnapped Tengen, and they needed more allies. She expected me to agree to help her. I threw her out of my house."
Awkward.
I'd done worse to Jin in a similar situation, though, so I could sympathize.
"You did the right thing.
Do you think she's still trying to gather more support?"
Derek nodded.
"Definitely. She's charismatic, and House Theus has powerful friends everywhere, even outside of this continent, if rumors are to be believed. I suspect she's been gathering people and sending them to wherever Ordon has been holding the kidnapped visage."
"And you don't have any idea where that place is?"
He shook his head. "I've tried following her directly, but I don't think she's actually been going to that location. I think she's just giving information to people. Then they're probably meeting with other intermediaries to learn the rendezvous point. In truth, you were one of the people I was watching. I suspected that even if you weren't directly involved, you might know something."
I sighed, taking a drink of water before replying. "You might have been close to the mark, in truth."
He raised an eyebrow.
"Oh? Are you saying you were involved?"
I shook my head. "Not directly or intentionally, but..." I tensed, then steeled myself to continue. "Kitashi mentioned that my brother was involved."
Derek didn't look even slightly surprised.
"Right. That's why I was investigating you."
I blinked. "You knew?"
Derek shrugged.
"Sure. When Alora first tried to get me involved, she told me that Tristan was one of the people leading the operation. Tristan, Alora, and I were friends in school before we'd earned our attunements. She thought that telling me he was involved would help convince me."
"And it didn't?"
"Quite the opposite, actually. I assumed Tristan was dead for years, and now he's alive and engaging in clandestine operations involving kidnapping visages? That's nothing if not suspicious."
Derek paused, looking contemplative.
"I considered agreeing to help, just to learn more about what they were up to. It would have been the wise move in truth, but Alora has always been able to see right through my attempts at guile. I think that would have led to a far worse confrontation."
I turned my head down, staring blankly at my food.
"I wish you'd have at least told me he was alive."
"You didn't know?"
I shook my head.
"Nope.
Not until Kitashi told me that Tristan was one of the kidnappers."
Derek gave me an apologetic look.
Sorry about that. As I said, I thought you might be working with him, or otherwise aware of his movements."
It was a logical assumption. Trust within a family sounded so reasonable on the surface. I set my jaw and tried to regain my focus on the conversation.
"All right. I don't blame you. For the moment, let's focus on moving forward. If you've already turned Alora down and she's looking for allies, do you think I could convince her to let me in on her plans?"
He raised a hand to his chin, seeming to consider that.
"Doubtful. Your connection to Tristan would be a good opening, but she has ways to determine if someone is telling the truth. Beyond that, Ordon probably has been keeping her apprised of the situation, including your role. It would probably just get you captured."
"Okay. What about one of the others, then? Would Ordon have told her about Patrick or Marissa?"
"Maybe not. But they're not significant enough for Alora to pay attention."
Marissa turned toward us, looking a little hurt.
"Are we really that unimportant?"
I hadn't realized she'd even been listening.
Derek waved a placating hand at her.
"Not that you're not amazing, Marissa. I'm just saying she'd probably only be interested in someone with a great deal of power, magically or politically."
Marissa frowned.
"I suppose that's how most nobles think, ain't it?"
Derek gave her a sheepish grin.
Sorry.
He turned back to me.
"Anyway, I don't know if we have anyone who would be able to infiltrate her operation.
I considered that. Karis? He's obviously powerful. Derek shook his head again.
Definitely not a good idea. I doubt she'd work with him, and if she did, I'd be worried that she'd convince him to stay on their side.
I got the implication and felt mildly offended on Karis's behalf. He didn't seem to be the type to be easily tricked into changing his allegiances. But then again, I didn't really know Karis, and Derek was right about the possible risks. Okay, weird question, but do you know if my mother is connected with them? Derek frowned.
I was hoping you could tell me that. I know she's on the Council of Lords with Allura, and that she tends to push for bolstering our military, but I don't know if she'd agree with using artificial attuned for that purpose.
Mother was something of a traditionalist, which made me think that she'd oppose making artificial attuned. But if the idea of gaining more military power for the country conflicted with her sense of traditionalism, I didn't know which would win out. I'll see if I can contact her and find out if she's involved.
Good, just be discreet. I suppose I'll see if I can talk some sense into Allura, but don't get your hopes too high.
I nodded absently, my mind already shifting to other topics. I'd figure out how to extract what Allura knew later. Do you think I need to be worried about reprisals for taking action against Ordin, or based on how much I know?
Yes, but I don't think anyone will act immediately. I spoke to Lord Teft and Vice-Chancellor Bennett while you were asleep and filled them in on the situation. We agreed that you and the others should continue attending your classes normally, but I'd advise you to continue to stay here at night.
I folded my arms. I wish you would have talked to me before discussing anything with Teft. He was clearly involved with Ordin on some level, if not with this plan. Derek chuckled.
I suppose his situation isn't much different from mine, in a way. I don't think Ordin ever let him in on any of the details, though. Teft would never have approved of attacking Tengen. He might not look like it, but he's fiercely devoted to the goddess.
Teft? Religious?
Huh. Wouldn't have expected that.
I mean, virtually everyone worshipped the goddess to some degree, but I didn't take Teft for the type to be particularly dedicated to anyone other than himself. That was kind of a mean line of thinking, though, and it wasn't exactly fair. He'd pushed himself to near unconsciousness, keeping us safe from Mizuchi, and in spite of his antics in class, he was extraordinarily careful to make certain his students were taking proper safety measures. I'd been judging him largely based on our first meeting, which was admittedly a terrible first impression. But in fairness, the teacher who had seemed nice was the one who was actually masterminding a scheme on a national scale, so maybe I just needed to stop judging people on appearances.
I understand your reasoning, but I'm still not sure I can trust him. I tightened my jaw.
Then again, I'm not sure I can trust anyone right now.
That brings me to another point, actually. Derek shook his head. I didn't tell Teft or the Vice-Chancellor about Jin. I wanted to get your take on it first.
I winced. Do you know what happened to him?
Derek shook his head. No. I just know what you told me in Karis, and I haven't followed up. Do you think he's a threat?
I thought back to what Jin had said when we'd fought. He'd made it clear that he wasn't a spy for another government. He was just trying to protect his own homeland. There was no excuse for what he did, but I didn't expect him to take other immediate steps to cause harm. I don't think I can make an accurate assessment of that. I clearly misjudged him before. I hesitated, then added, but for what it's worth, I don't think he's probably a threat to either of us. And I don't see him doing anything to directly sabotage Velia either. His action was opportunistic. Now that Vera is out of his reach, I don't see him doing anything drastic.
Derek nodded, considering. Sounds about right. He drummed his fingers on the table. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hire someone to keep an eye on him for a while, just to see if he does anything suspicious. But I won't turn him in to the Vice-Chancellor. Not yet. Treason charges aren't the kind of thing you walk away from, and I get the impression he doesn't deserve that kind of punishment.
I raised an eyebrow. I'm surprised you're being that charitable.
Derek shrugged. I've seen the kinds of things being an outsider can do to someone. And for what it's worth, I'm not convinced Vera didn't deserve what she got.
I blinked. I thought you liked her.
I did. Doesn't mean she was a good person. I've done a lot of digging into those artificial attunements over the years, and the picture isn't pretty.
Derek shook his head.
That's a topic for another time, though. For the moment, I have a present for you.
He took out a stick. I put a hand over my heart. Such a touching gift. You shouldn't have.
The swordsman shoved the piece of wood in my direction. I accepted it with more curiosity than cynicism, turning it over in my hands.
No obvious runes.
I turned my attunement on. The glow was very subtle, but it was there. Just a hint of a colorless, translucent field, like around a quartz level attuned, but fainter. If I wasn't looking for it in specific, I was confident I wouldn't have noticed it. Even looking straight at it, I was half convinced it was just in my mind. I frowned, turning my attunement back off.
That, Derek gestured, is perhaps the world's most advanced magical object.
My eyes shifted down, then back to him.
Yeah, no, not believing that.
He laughed.
Okay, fine. It's a stick. But it is a magical item, and as I'm sure you noticed, not a typical one.
No runes. I ran my fingers across the surface. Not even invisible ones.
I paused, considering. Wait, is this one of your soul blade items? Oh no, I don't like you that much. It's just an unusual enchanting style.
I turned it over in my hands. Where are the runes?
That's between me and the enchanter who made it. He grinned. And that gives you an advantage. No one knows to look for it.
Maybe he carved runes on an inner rod and glued this bark onto it? Or maybe there aren't any runes, and it's alchemically treated somehow.
I turned the stick over in my hands, pondering. So, what's it actually do? If you crack it in half, it sends a signal to a linked item in my possession. My item will make a sound and begin to glow. Once I notice it, I can activate my item to see a visible trail to the location of your stick.
I raised a hand to my chin, thinking. It's an emergency signal. That's good, but wouldn't something like a return bell be better?
Derek grinned. Sure, but those are expensive. Sticks are cheap.
Thanks, Derek. Your generosity is overwhelming. I set the stick down on the table. If I get my bell back at some point, could I set it to teleport here?
Nope. Anti-teleportation field around the whole house. You'd need a key to circumvent it, and I'm not letting you make one of those. Besides, standard return bells only work if you're in the spire. The draw on the tower's mana or something. You can make ones that work anywhere, but they're more expensive and have a shorter range. We usually call those jump bells.
Huh. I guess that's why the ones we used during the fake tower tests worked a little bit differently. I'll have to keep that in mind for the future. I nodded.
Okay. Do you have more magic sticks at least? Sarah, Marissa, and Patrick could probably use them. I can handle making those. Might take a few days, but I'll get one for each of them.
Okay, thanks. My mind was starting to wander onto the next steps in my plan. I should figure out how to make one of those more advanced return bells. I think Derek called them jump bells. They're probably too powerful for me to assemble on my own right now, but I could start working toward it.
Derek raised a single finger. One more thing. That new attunement you've got? I'm pretty sure it's either an ascended attunement or a restricted attunement.
I tilted my head to the side.
What are those?
I'd heard of ascended attunements briefly, but I had no idea what restricted attunements were.
Ascended attunements are attunements that have progressed to the point of changing into something new. They can generally do everything a normal attunement can, but some new things.
So they're just more powerful than normal attunements? I asked. Derek shook his head.
It's not a matter of power, like progressing from quartz to carnelian would be. Ascended attunements just have new things they can do, like giving you additional types of mana or new abilities. Before you ask, I don't know how to get one, and I don't know much about how they work. Believe me, I've been trying to figure that out for a while.
I nodded. Derek continued.
I think it's more likely you've got a restricted attunement. There are a handful of attunements that you can't get out of a standard judgment. The only people known with them are the ones that the visages hand them to. No pun intended there. It's possible they normally come from judgments in the spider spire, but Since no one knows where that is, it's impossible to say.
Now that was interesting.
Isn't there some kind of seventh tower in the middle of the unclaimed lands, too?
Oh, that?
Derek laughed again.
It's real, but it's useless as far as I can tell. I've been there. It looks like a soaring spire, maybe even bigger, actually. It's cylindrical, and it's the only one that's perfectly smooth. There's only one set of gates, and it's locked tight. Couldn't put a scratch on them.
You tried to blast your way into a spire?
Derek shrugged. I was bored, alone, and hundreds of miles from home. I didn't want to waste the whole trip out there. So, yeah, I tried to break into the tower. A lot. I tried climbing it, too. Summoned my pact-bound friends. Nothing we tried worked.
Huh.
Okay, well, it's probably not related to this. He raised a hand to his chin. Unless you can get in there through the other towers. If there's a way to teleport from another tower, it'd be a perfect safe hiding place for the people who captured Tengen. Presuming the place is set up like the other spires, of course, and that there are safe spots, which there might not be.
I'll try to do some research on that, too, if I can find the time.
Don't worry about that spire. You were right, it's probably not related. If you really want to be involved with this, I definitely think talking to your mother should be the priority. Aside from that, let's get you and your friends strong enough that I'll be comfortable taking you with me to the tower if I need to.
I nodded. Sounds like a good plan. Does that mean you're going to offer us some kind of special training? Teach us the secrets of how you reached Emerald at such a young age, maybe?
Goddess, no. I don't have time for that.
Derek grinned.
But you know, Karis might.
I thought back to Derek's Emerald-level summoned monster, panicking at the idea of even sparring with Karis. This was a terrible idea. Marissa and I stood up at the same time, then glanced meaningfully at each other.
Well, at least I'm not the only crazy one.
Chapter 2. Special Training. We found Karis back on the roof. I don't know when or how he slipped past us to get back up there, but it didn't really matter. He was sitting with his legs folded in front of him in an unusual style, his sword laid across his lap. His eyes were closed. On a hunch, I flicked my attunement on. The aura around the unsheathed blade of his sword was a silvery hue under my attuned vision, thicker than the flickers of argent I'd seen in his personal shroud during moments of intensity. No question that it was the same color, though. I still didn't have the faintest idea what that meant. There was no level of attunement that corresponded to a silver glow. Even if I extrapolated through the colors of the rainbow beyond green and imagined hypothetical ranks above emerald or sapphire, silver wasn't one of those colors, and this definitely wasn't just a strange shade of blue. It looked like a haze of metal, complete with a lustrous reflection. Do foreigners have different aura colors because their magic works differently? Maybe a copper, silver, gold scale or something? If that follows, and he's only silver, I'd hate to see how powerful gold would be. While I was distracted with the epiphany that tyrant in gold could refer to an aura color, Marissa stepped forward.
My Lord Karis, forgive me for bothering you while you're meditating. Can we spare a moment?
Karis opened a single eye. Well, if you're being that polite, how can I refuse? He closed his eyes again, cracked his neck, and then his sword was sheathed at his side. With my attunement still active, I could see that a silvery aura lingered in the air where his blade had been, but just for a moment. The weapon itself was no longer emitting an aura now that it was sheathed. Instead, I could see a faint blue aura around the scabbard.
Now that's interesting.
Blue meant sapphire. That was absurdly potent. We'd been told in class that sapphire mages were purely hypothetical, but at least it was something our system could properly identify. And that was just the scabbard. Why did it need an aura like that? What did it do?
Karis reopened his eyes and stood, glancing to Marissa, to me, and back to Marissa. What can I help you with?
Marissa bowed deeply.
Please, teach me how to fight.
I raised a hand to rub behind my head.
Me too, I guess.
Karis folded his arms.
Why would you want me to teach you?
That can't be a serious question. I frowned.
I can't speak for Mara, but I'm going to go with because you survived fighting a visage and an emerald-level elemental is terrified of you?
He turned his head away from me, his jaw tightening.
That wasn't a good response.
Was he angry?
Maybe. But if I was reading his eyes right, it looked more like shame. Fortunately, Marissa jumped in before Karis had a chance to flatten me for my insolence or anything.
Milord, I was mostly thinking that you had a unique fighting style with shaping your shroud into blades and such, especially when you hit everything around you at once.
He turned his head to her immediately.
What do you mean by that last part?
When you were stuck in the stone, sir. I couldn't see it, but I could feel when your shroud shifted. And it didn't feel like burning. I felt like cutting. The same as when you cut through Milord Hardigan's shroud. Never seen anyone do something like that with their shroud before, Milord. Not even our teachers can change their shroud into blades.
Karis's eyes narrowed. No, I doubt anyone else could.
He sighed, looking away.
If that's what you want to learn, I can't teach you. You wouldn't have the right type of mana, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Begging your pardon, my lord. Maybe I couldn't do precisely what you do, but...
She pressed her hands together in front of her, closing her eyes for a heartbeat, and then brought them back apart. Her crimson shroud stretched out 4 inches in front of her hands, in blade-like points.
It isn't much, my lord, but...
Karis closed the distance between them in a moment, striding forward with fervor. Marissa didn't retreat. If I'd been faster, I probably would have stepped between them in alarm, but Karis moved too quickly. He reached upward and brushed his hand against the blade-like shroud. I saw silvery sparks when his fingers made contact.
Remarkable. You managed this after only seeing me once?
Marissa nodded.
It isn't anything like your technique, sir. I know that. It's just a standard shroud shaped like...
Karis tilted his head to the side, examining the shroud.
You're not the first person I've seen who can produce a similar blade, but at carnelian level? Having just seen something like it for the first time?
He paused for a moment, taking a step back and looking straight into her eyes.
It's beautiful.
Marissa blushed almost as bright red as her aura. Karis was turning away a moment later, raising a hand to his lip in thought. He looked totally oblivious to the reaction he just triggered.
Yes, I believe I can teach you a bit. I will make no promises of anything specific. I'm not much of a teacher.
While he wasn't focusing on me, I tried pushing on my own newly formed carnelian aura, trying to get it to move into a blade shape. Predictably, it didn't respond in the slightest. I'd only had a shroud at all for about a day, and I had no idea how to use it properly. Marissa had been using a shroud since she'd earned her attunement. She was a guardian, and shroud manipulation was their specialty. It made sense that she'd be able to pick up on a shroud-based technique more quickly than I could. Still, I was a little disappointed. I always seemed to be one step behind. More like 5 steps if I compared myself to Derek or Tristan. Those comparisons were even less fair, but that didn't stop my miserable brain from making them. But just because I couldn't learn the same thing that Marissa could as quickly didn't mean that I had nothing to learn from Karis.
If you're willing to consider me a student as well, Karis, I'd like to learn more about how your magic works.
He turned his head toward me and blinked, seemingly just remembering that I was present.
Oh, Corin. I can tell you some theory, I suppose, but I don't think you'd be able to cast anything. Same problem as I mentioned to Marissa. You don't have the right types of mana. But if she can come up with a way to do something similar with her own mana, I suppose you might be able to apply some of my theory as well.
He shrugged.
I'll give it a try. It's worthwhile if it helps you protect yourself. I can't be with you all the time.
I found the implications of that a little demeaning, but I knew what he meant. I'd appreciate anything you'd be willing to teach. Marissa was staring at Karis in wordless... admiration, maybe? So I continued.
When do you think you might be able to start? Let's plan to discuss things a bit more tomorrow. Today's sparring left me in poor spirits.
Talking to you both has helped a bit, but I need some time to myself to clear my mind. I'll also need to think about what lessons might be useful to you. I'll see if I can think of anything that would be applicable to both of you, but I may need to train you each separately, at least on some things.
We both nodded.
Thanks, Karis. I appreciate the help.
Marissa bowed again, still looking a little awkward.
Thanks.
And then she disappeared back into the house. Karis frowned. What a strange girl.
Quite talented, but strange.
I couldn't help but laugh.
I don't know if she's the strange one, Karis.
He looked at me and tilted his head to the side.
What do you mean?
When you walk up close to someone and tell them that they're beautiful, or I suppose that their sword hand aura is beautiful, I rolled my eyes for emphasis, they might take that as a bit flirtatious.
Oh.
He put a hand to his forehead.
Oh, dear. Isn't she a bit young to be thinking of me in that way?
I pointed a finger at him. You're the one who called her beautiful, not me. You can sort it out. He turned his head skyward.
I think I'm just going to have to leave the matter alone and hope she forgets about it. She probably understands I was just complimenting her martial prowess.
I was definitely not the world's leading expert on relationships. Until recently, I had always assumed that my lack of desire for sex meant I'd never be interested in anything romantic at all. I was just starting to figure out that sexual and romantic interests could be distinct. And then I'd blown up my love interest.
Oops.
So my qualifications for this kind of thing? Not outstanding. I was D-ranked quartz in romantic understanding at best. Even then I could tell that Karis was being hilariously naive about this. Maybe it was mean of me, but I was tickled by seeing an unstoppable force of nature acting completely befuddled about how to deal with a teenaged girl. I chuckled too and headed back toward the house.
Good luck with that.
I was still grinning when I pulled up a chair next to the table where Sarah and Patrick were playing Valor. Sarah was winning, of course. She had already taken 7 of his pieces off the board, and he'd only managed to take 3 of hers. Patrick was smiling, though, so at least he was having a good time. Of course, he knew Sarah was amazing at Valor. He also knew she was probably upset about her inability to speak, especially since that directly impacted her ability to use magic. The more I thought about it, the more I was certain that he'd picked this activity deliberately to let her feel better. Patrick was an amazing retainer. He glanced at me as I sat down.
You look pleased about something.
I chuckled again. Oh, I think Karis accidentally gave Marissa a bit of a crush is all. Sarah turned toward me, raising an eyebrow, and using a come-hither gesture to indicate she wanted more information. Nothing scandalous. He just complimented her on being able to shape her aura into a blade after watching him do it once. If you saw her blushing, though... Sarah narrowed her eyes at me. I raised my hands defensively. Don't worry, I'm not going to tease her about it.
Probably.
She glared harder. Okay, definitely. Fine, fine. I can even make sure she knows he's, like, probably super old. I'm honestly not sure.
I'd guess about 25, Patrick offered.
I shrugged. Could be 25,000 for all we know. I don't think he's human. Sarah nodded vehemently at that. Interesting. Did she pick up on something I hadn't? As a summoner, she probably had more insight into how monsters worked. I'd have to ask her. Oh, right. Well, she could write something down. Patrick glanced back at Sarah.
Alas, a forbidden love. Like my love for you, Sarah.
Sarah snorted, then made a vaguely heart-shaped gesture in her hands and broke it apart. Patrick laughed and moved his piece on the board, taking one of hers.
That's for breaking my second-best heart.
She brought her hand up to her mouth, and I heard the faintest wheezing coming through her lips. Apparently, that was all she could manage for a laugh right now. That worried me a bit, but at least they were both smiling. I'd worried a bit that they'd lose their friendship after Sarah had shot Patrick down about going to the winter ball, but they seemed as close as ever.
Good.
I stood back up.
Good luck to you both. Maybe I'll play the winner later.
Patrick groaned.
Don't wander off too far, then. At this rate, that won't take very long.
I patted him on the shoulder.
You can play your best 3 out of 5 first. I've got some work to do. I got dressed in my uniform. It wasn't in the best of shape after all the insanity in the tower, but I didn't have a full change of clothes here. I need to go back to my dorm room for that. I packed my gear and belted on Celise Leanne. The new stick went in my side pouch, just in case. I borrowed a glove for my right hand from Derek, since my own had been shredded during the fight with Jin. The metallic part was perfectly intact. I just needed to replace the leather portion. Then I headed out of the mansion. My first stop was the Climber's Court, since it was just a few blocks away. Lars looked me up and down as soon as I walked into the store.
Goddess above, lad! You look like Mizuchi chewed you up and spat you out!
I cracked my knuckles. Oh, no. We managed to avoid the room she was in. He blinked.
You saw her?
I nodded. Sure did. But that wasn't even the scary part. He leaned back against a nearby table.
Sounds like you finally have a story to tell me for a change.
I smiled. You know what? I think I do. I paused, considering. But I'm going to have to leave a few parts out. I'm not supposed to be talking about them. He waved a hand dismissively.
You don't have to tell me that, Corin. You just fill those parts in with something more exciting. The story is more entertaining that way.
Well, I pulled up a chair and sat down. It all started when Visage Katashi asked me to do him a favor. It took me a better part of an hour to tell a heavily edited version of my tale. I talked mostly about the tower rooms themselves, and completely left out the fighting against Orden, Derek, and Jin. He listened intently the whole time, hints of concern mixed in with peals of uproarious laughter. And now I'm here, alive, thanks to the magic cloak you loaned me. Lars folded his arms, nodding with a grim expression.
And your sister? She still can't speak.
I took a deep breath, feeling a pang of guilt at my role in that. Too much scarring. She's using that regenerating rock I made, but I don't think it's helping much.
I still can't believe you enchanted a rock. How'd you do it so quickly? I thought enchanting something on that scale took hours. And isn't doing something that far above your attunement level a tremendous risk?
I nodded. It was a risk, but moving mana felt so easy in the tower. I felt like my attunement was enhanced while I was in there. I've never been able to manipulate mana in the air outside, for example.
I always felt stronger in the tower, too, but I could never sense the mana like you did.
I tapped my right hand. I think this might have something to do with it, too. Even before Katashi changed it into an attunement, it felt easier to channel mana through my hand. I couldn't actively draw mana out of the brand, but I think it might have been helping me. Lars shook his head.
I still can't believe you have a gift from Katashi himself. You've impressed me, boy.
Thanks, Lars. I smiled. Couldn't have done it without your help.
Aye. So now you can start working on repaying me.
I laughed. I'll get right on it. To start with, do you have any more powerful healing items for sale? Something stronger than a ring of regeneration?
For your sister, I take it. Nothing like that, I'm afraid. I'd see about talking to a mender. Even if Katashi couldn't have helped her right then, sometimes menders can help with long-term treatment to accelerate natural recovery. Aside from that, there's always taking a trip to Kaelford, but I wouldn't put your hopes on that.
Why not?
Ferris only takes on projects that interest her. Hundreds, maybe thousands of people petition her for help with something each year. And that's if you even get a chance to talk to her. You'd have to find her first.
I nodded. I can try other routes first, but I'll find a way to help Sarah, regardless of how much effort it takes.
That's a good spirit to have, lad. Now, can I interest you in something a bit less divine in cost?
Sure. Let me take a look around. In the end, I didn't buy anything right then, but I put a few items on my list for the future. He didn't have a jump bell for sale, but he did have a single-use teleportation stone that interested me. That was only 15 silver sigils, so it was reasonable, but I still didn't have that much money on me. I was also interested in getting an enchanted dueling tunic. My shield sigil and phoenix sigil both provided a good layer of defense against magical attacks,
but I was extremely vulnerable to standard physical attacks. If Derek had hit me with a clean sword swing, I'd have been dead. I couldn't keep taking risks like that. I considered more old-fashioned armor. He had some of that as well. But I wanted something that wouldn't hinder my mobility significantly. My preference would have been to get a dueling tunic. Dueling tunics were essentially just cloth, but they were made from rare and valuable materials that provided a high degree of defense, both against traditional weapons and spells. The two most common types were iron weave and steel weave. Neither was actually metallic. They were simply called that because they were difficult to cut. I'd heard that the silk used to make them was from monstrous spiders. Some dueling tunics were also enchanted for additional protection, like the one that Ordin wore. I considered just enchanting my own shirt and coat, but I couldn't manage anything particularly potent yet. The runes for hardening a material were the key to making cloth provide any extra protection, and those required stone and enhancement mana, two types I couldn't generate myself. Getting a dueling tunic would have been somewhat more plausible. Unfortunately, even the most basic enhanced dueling tunics were about 250 silver sigils, more than I'd ever owned. Lars's most expensive one was 700, and Lars told me he'd heard of ones that sold for thousands. So, yeah, that was going to take me a while. Aside from those, I also still wanted a long-distance communication item, but he didn't have any. I'd have to look into other shops or make one myself. With my shopping out of the way, I headed to the next place on my agenda, the Divinatory. I still had a key to the restricted archives. Professor Ordin had given it to me when I'd still been working with her. I figured I had at least a few days before someone else remembered that and tried to take it away. I made it into the restricted section without incident. I wasn't the only one in there, though. An elemental creature floated in the center of the room, her shining blue skin contrasting with her current outfit, a tailored suit in the Academy's white. She was about a foot above a raised platform etched with a complex pattern of runes. It was some sort of combination of a containment device and power source, but I didn't know exactly how it worked. Either way, it was definitely what kept her in the room. She was doing stretching exercises when she saw me enter. She gave me a cheerful wave.
Hello again, Corn Cadence. I am researcher 437C. I have an answer to your previous question.
I blinked, not remembering what she was talking about. Oh, what's the answer?
You may refer to me as a summon.
Oh, that. She didn't like being called a summoned monster, because it had monster in it. Makes sense. I wouldn't want to be called a monster either. Probably would have gone with summoned elemental in her case. Her choice, though. Summon it is, then. She visibly brightened, and I mean that in the literal sense. She glowed a little brighter, even without my attunement active. I hope that meant she was happy.
Thank you, Corin Cadence. How may I assist you today?
I removed the glove on my right hand and showing her my new attunement rune. Any idea what this is? Her eyes widened to comical proportions. Then she knelt down and lowered her head.
I am honored to serve in your presence, Arbiter.
I tilted my head to the side. Arbiter? Is that the title for this attunement? Researcher replied without raising her head.
It is.
I waved a hand upward, uncomfortable with her reaction. No need to be so formal. You can stand, or float, back up. Researcher raised her head, then stood and floated back above her pedestal as before.
If I would better serve you in that way, Arbiter.
I'd been raised in a noble household, so I understood the kind of behavior she was demonstrating, but it still felt wrong. Unearned. Can you explain to me what this attunement does and why you're reacting the way that you are?
Certainly, Arbiter. Your attunement is only granted to one who has successfully completed a diplomatic task for one of the visages. Typically, it involves assisting in a political matter between visages and human cultures. Arbiters have demonstrated that they can be trusted with delicate matters, and thus they are often employed by visages for additional assignments.
Researcher paused, gesturing to herself with both hands.
As a spire elemental, I am bound to assist an arbiter in any way possible, since their tasks are often of great importance to the visages.
Well, that's good and bad. It means I might be able to ask other elementals for help, but it also means Katashi or other visages might come calling for more help in the future. And I certainly can't say no to one of their requests. I considered that for a moment, raising a hand to my chin. I didn't scratch it. I was trying to cut back on that habit.
Okay, but you're a summoned elemental, right? What happens if I ask you to do something that conflicts with your summoner's instructions?
I cannot directly go against my summoner's commands, even at an arbiter's request.
She grinned, showing a hint of mischief glimmering in her eyes.
But if it wasn't directly against my summoner's orders...
Huh. She's got a mischievous streak. Wouldn't have guessed that.
Got it. I smiled in return. I'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
Do you know exactly what I can do with this? I mean, like, what abilities does the attunement confer? She nodded once.
Ah, yes. The Arbiter Attunement specializes in transferring mana into others. Its primary mana generation type is transference. Its secondary type is life.
I blinked. Wait, transferring mana into others? Isn't that extremely dangerous?
Humans typically are unable to transfer mana into other humans because of impurities. The Arbiter Attunement purifies mana that is sent through that specific attunement, allowing for safe transfer into other humans. This is its core function. It can be used to both restore lost mana and to temporarily increase the power of an ally over their normal maximum limits.
My eyes widened as I considered the possibilities this created. Temporarily? Is there any permanent benefit to using the attunement on someone? She held up two fingers in a sign for little.
A slight one. Anything that pushes and attunes mana beyond their capacity has the potential to increase that capacity permanently, but usually just a bit. And doing it too frequently or with too high of a volume of mana all at once can cause damage. For example, an emerald-level attuned pushing as much mana as possible into a quartz-level attuned could potentially cause them permanent harm.
I processed that. There was a lot of potential in this new attunement. Could I use the purification function as a way to create enhancement elixirs without distilling them? Or maybe just transfer enough energy into someone to permanently increase their power a little bit, gradually over time? Could I combine this with my other attunement to put enchantments on people? Maybe that's how artificial attunements are made. I had some more direct questions to ask, too. Could I use this on myself to enhance my enchanter attunement? Researcher frowned at that.
It isn't meant to be used like that, but I suppose it might work. I haven't heard of any cases of it being used in that way, but the restricted attunements are obscure even by my standards. I don't have a lot of data to work with.
I'd have to save that as a last resort then. I would have been more tempted if my other attunement had a direct combat application, but... trying to enhance my own enchanter attunement was a great deal of risk for the potential of a minimal benefit. I was getting a little bit better about using my mental mana without the watch, but the idea of flooding my brain with enough mana that it could potentially cause scars was... I shuddered a little bit just thinking about it, quickly changing the trajectory of my thoughts to something more palatable. If I gave someone enough mana to push them over the threshold to the next attunement level... would their attunement's level increase? Researcher nodded.
That is a standard way of using the attunement. However, it would be temporary. They would gain the benefits of the higher attunement level, but only until that additional mana is used, after which the attunement would most likely revert to its previous state.
Most likely?
As I noted previously, there is a small permanent benefit from receiving an infusion of mana. It's possible that your ability could be used as the catalyst for a permanent change, but only if they were already at the cusp of reaching the next attunement level on their own.
What kind of scale of permanent benefit are we talking about? She made a little, noise.
I would expect it to translate to being able to stretch the person's capacity to about 2% higher than their previous maximum, provided you supplied them with mana equal to their current maximum safe value. I would never give someone more extra mana than their current maximum value, nor would I advise using this on the same person more than once per week.
That was interesting. particularly because it implied that whatever had happened to Sarah when she drank the potion I'd given her wasn't the same as transferring mana into her directly. She checked in the morning, and her mark still hadn't returned to its previous appearance, in spite of her maximum mana apparently decreasing rather than increasing. It was possible that her attunement would have reverted if not for the scarring, but I suspected something else was at work. I hadn't just been giving her pure mana, after all. That potion was some sort of catalyst for attunements. I'd procrastinated long enough on analyzing the potion. I planned to do that within the next few days. Beyond that, knowing some of the safety limits of my attunement was extremely useful. I'd need to know everyone's safe mana levels, then I could transfer an equal amount into them, provided I had enough mana to do that. Marissa already had more mana than I did, but maybe I could use this as a tool to help Patrick catch up to us. And if I only needed to infuse him once a week, I could safely do the same thing for a few other people too. Can I give people mana more than once per week if it's in smaller amounts?
The more important part is that you don't want them to exceed their maximum more than once per week. You can safely recharge their mana as many times as you need to.
Good to know. That's probably enough on that subject for now. I took out the drawing of Sarah's new attunement and showed it to the researcher. Have you ever seen a rune like this before?
How fascinating.
The researcher stared at the image.
This is unfamiliar to me. I can check with the Central Archive, but that will take some time.
Central Archive? The elemental turned her head toward the east. Toward the spire, maybe?
My true self remains there, alongside many others of my kind. We gather, maintain, catalog, and distribute data. Tengen has kindly allowed this variant of me to remain here.
Well, that means this elemental isn't some kind of violation of divine laws, at least. That's good. I don't want to deal with any more visage-related complications right now. I have enough of them. What are the odds that mark is a restricted attunement? Researcher shook her head.
It's not. I'd have recognized it if it was.
What about an ascended attunement? Her eyes widened slightly.
That's possible, I suppose. I've never actually seen one.
That was interesting. Do you know how those are obtained or how they work?
No, but I'd like to. If you find out anything about them, I'd love to hear it.
I nodded. Okay, another question. If someone had lost the ability to use their attunement properly due to scarring, could I use this transfer ability from my new attunement to help them? Researcher shook her head sadly.
It would be unlikely to have any benefit. Mana scars inhibit the proper passage of mana through the body. Attempting to flood a scarred area with mana might do more harm than good.
Maybe I could get Sarah a second attunement then, and help her get stronger at using that? No, that's working around the problem. I'll do that if I have to, but I'd rather get her voice back. Do you know any means of healing mana scars?
Not easy ones. In Kelford, they are performing research on full organ replacements, with some signs of success. Our own research has been focused on restoring the body to a previous state, using a combination of local menders and other body-related attuned from other nations. There have been some successes with both approaches, but each has significant risks.
Researcher waved a hand toward the section of the library on her left.
The most reliable approach, unfortunately, remains the most difficult. In row 4D, you can find a section called Goddess-Touched Locales. We currently have three books covering a location called Vanreach Peak. In this location, rare medicinal herbs can sometimes be found during the winter season. These herbs serve as the foundation for the Vanreach Elixir, which is reported to be an effective treatment for virtually any physical injury, including mana scarring.
I perked up at that. How does this elixir work?
The herb itself is the most powerful known alchemical component for healing purposes. Elixirs created using the herbs, which are known as goddess's tears, trigger a potent regeneration effect on the body that can repair long-term damage on the body. Some claim the elixir is even potent enough to reverse the effects of aging.
That sounded pretty amazing. If this herb is so potent, why aren't we growing it on farms or in laboratories?
Attempts have been made, of course.
Researcher smiled.
But it isn't a naturally occurring herb, and all attempts to breed it have failed. We have a poor understanding of the conditions under which it grows, At one point, the Valian government placed the entire mountain under observation for the winter. No herbs were found that entire season. According to local legends, the herbs only grow when the goddess visits the mountain to mourn a friend. Thus the name.
I nodded at that. And I presume that, given